Ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Hey, good afternoon, out and abouters. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. I am your host, Captain DJ Mave, and you are listening to Out and About. And what a special, you know, where were we last week? Tuesday, Election Tuesday, seems like a lifetime ago. And you know, we have a lot to talk about, but we're not going to dwell a whole lot on the election because I have a hunch we're going to have 4 years of dystopia to talk about. And, you know, it's going to be fun, right? So let's, but we are going to talk about something that kind of relates to it in a way. We've got the Transgender Day of Remembrance that is celebrated on November 20th. Right now we're in the November 13th through the 19th or 20th, that's sort of your, or 19th is your Transgender Day of Remembrance Week, and our Transgender Week of Remembrance. And then, but we're going to be talking about the specific day itself. And we're a little bit early, but that's just because we've got guests lined up. And today we tried to get folks who are organizing a local event up here in the library, and we're going to talk about that, but they were unable to come. And but I have like the next best person on the microphone right now. I have Linnea Kaler. Linnea, hello.
Hello, hello.
It's so good to see you. You've been so busy. For those who don't, people who don't know, Linnea is our, is the administrator, basically. What's your title?
I am the office manager for KYRS and Air Community Radio. I also am a contributing feature reporter for KYRS Local News.
So, and Linnea was able to take a little time off to come into the studio and talk with us because Linnea, like myself, is a trans woman. And but Linnea has been at this a whole lot longer than I. Linnea is a bit of a pioneer. Linnea, why don't you just give a little bit of introduction about your transgenderedness?
Well, you're not the only person who has at times called me a pioneer. I don't see myself as a pioneer at all. To me, a pioneer would be someone like Sylvia Rivera or Marsha B. Johnson, maybe some others that came up around the 90s, maybe Dallas Denny or even Marlena Lacey. I wrote for her for a while for TV Epic when I was in the Bay Area.
Yeah, well, so then so you know some of these folks, and I guess maybe pioneer is a little strong, but you know, as far as you came out and lived your life when it was a lot more dangerous to do so, didn't you?
It was somewhat more dangerous. I first came out publicly in 1996.
Okay.
It was 1998 when I really burst out on the scene. I was down in the Los Angeles area, and I heard about the Queen Mary, and we're not talking about the boat. We are talking about a show lounge in Studio City, California, that originally belonged to Mae West.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. Back in the early 1970s when she was doing, I forget what the movie was.
Oh, yeah, with Arnold Schwarzenegger, was it?
No, or it wasn't with Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was something else.
Yeah.
But it was a movie that presented someone who could be identified as a trans person, and it was a there were some pretty unsavory things in that movie.
Yes.
And it made transgender people very angry.
Oh, because they didn't need the bad press.
Yes. So what she ended up doing was that she dedicated one of her places to a show lounge where transgender people could gather. And when it changed hands to the next management, she stipulated that it had to remain for that purpose. And it lasted that way until 2003, and now it's a Turkish restaurant.
Oh, wow. Well, it had a good run. And so, but you were involved then, and so what were you doing? What did you do at the Queen Mary then?
Well, at the Queen Mary, I mostly mingled with other trans people, and it was there where I met my future husband, at least physically, because I had seen him in a dream 4 years before that time, and I recognized him when I saw him.
Oh, sure.
Most of what happened was that one thing led to another. I ended up in touch with Marlena Lacey, who put me on the cover of TV Epic, and then later I wrote for her when I moved up to the Bay Area for a job. And I did not enjoy the Bay Area at first. I ended up homeless for about 6 weeks while working. I competed with 75 people to get an 8x12 room for $500 a month without kitchen privileges. I ate in the car, and I considered myself fortunate.
Wow, that's something.
The Bay Area is not an easy place to live. But once I got established there, I was close to BART, so I could go into the city at any time. And when I connected with Transgender San Francisco, who I would also refer to as TGSF, things really began to happen at that point. And one of the other people that was a member at that time was Teresa Sparks. She was probably the key organizer for the Transgender Civil Rights Implementation Task Force. I served that task force as Employment Committee Secretary in 2000. And in the following year, Gwendolyn Ann Smith became a voting member.
Okay.
And she is the founder of what is now the International Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Right. And yes, right there. And I've got this on my notes, but you just hit it all. So how have you been involved in the past with the Transgender Day of Remembrance?
My involvement has taken various forms. Sometimes I was involved in organizing an event with an LGBT center. There was one in Orange County, California that I got involved with, and I spoke at that. And at other times, I led an online group on Zoom to bring people together who didn't have any way to connect for Day of Remembrance. And if I didn't have any recourse, I ended up just getting the list and had my own remembrance by myself. So this is something that I have observed with other people, if I can, and alone if I must. But I have observed it every year since 2000. When Gwendolyn Ann Smith actually spoke at United Nations Plaza in San Francisco and declared that the Day of Remembrance would be held every year on November 20 for as long as we continue to be murdered in hate crimes.
Wow. And so it's been, you know, I last year I talked about this, and that was, in 2020 we had president-elect back then, Joe Biden, came and talked, basically stood up for transgender folks. And we kind of saw a reverse of that in this election with Trump, basically kind of demonizing trans folks in a lot of the spots, the ad spots. And so I guess we'll get into that a little bit later, but I guess the big thing to talk about right now is like, what is the Transgender Day of Remembrance? What does it do? I mean, I'm sure people who've listened to the show might know, but maybe there's somebody listening for the first time.
The Transgender Day of Remembrance is a number of things. Sometimes it takes the form of a rally. Sometimes it takes the form of a march. But it appeals to conscience, because for centuries, we have faced oppression. Ever since the 4th century in Rome, we have actually been consigned. In fact, back in Rome, it was during the time of Ambrose and Theodosius that, I think it was 390, that we were delegated to execution by burning.
Wow.
Yeah. And that carried over into European law for centuries afterwards. And consequently, it came over to what would become the United States, because our laws are really based upon the laws that are inherited from the United Kingdom, and we have simply modified since then.
Yeah.
So it has become culturally ingrained to put down trans people, especially trans women.
Yeah, and why do you think that is? I have my own theory. And I guess, you know, to kind of encapsulate what you said, so Transgender Day of Remembrance is the day that we remember all the trans folks who've been killed for being trans, both in the United States, but also around the world.
Yes.
So, but to get back to that, why do you think that there seems to be more violence against trans women than trans men?
I think it's a cultural thing, and that even takes, in some cases, some religious overtones.
Yeah.
Trans women, in order to survive, do not have the same kind of opportunities as trans men have. If a trans man can pass and get into something like a construction crew, that guy is as happy as could be.
Yeah.
A trans woman, on the other hand, women have always had to claw their way to the top anyway.
Yeah.
In the workforce. A trans woman gets a double whammy, sometimes even more than that, because of this cultural attitude. It's very difficult to find work. She will probably end up in the survival trades, the sex industry, the drug industry, and there's always somebody looking for a trans woman to exploit.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, that's what's so great about, you know, I tell you, I don't know if I would have come out. I don't think I would have if I knew it was going to cost me my job, which was a good paying job, or, you know, being in the military or being in the fire department, all that stuff. I think that that's one of the things that people forget about. The protections that are afforded trans people is that it lets us be actually helpful people in society and to do good things for other people and not have to go into the sex trade industry or go into the, you know, into any kind of that's illegal activity. My theory about it, you know, and I don't have anything much to back it up, as I just think that, well, in this last election, we saw again how deep the misogyny runs in the United States. And I think that for some guys, when they have what appears to be female and they transition into male, female to male transgender person, that I think that the men around them say, yeah, they want to be a part of my club and I get it. And sometimes, you know, a lot of these women are already kind of, you know, they kind of fit the stereotype. They're, you know, what they, and I think that they, not that their walk is very easy, but I think that is, it's understandable why they would want to like logically do this. But for people like you and I, that we're, you know, we're white and white men have the most privilege, that when we say, you know what, telling the truth about ourselves is more important than the privilege that is afforded us by being men. So I think that when we tell the truth about ourselves, that we actually are trans women, that I think it's a pretty big effrontery to a lot of men.
And it's even effrontery to ourselves at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy to really come to terms with it.
Yeah.
I showed signs as early as 8 years old, but yeah, I did not come out until I was approaching 40 years old.
Yeah, my first memories were when I was five, And it go. Just, you know, you think that it's something you can shake and something you can fight, and this is going to be the cure of this, and these prayers are going to help, and this, you know, no matter how much you pray and all the things you do and have girlfriends, get married, have kids, that this is always sort of the stone inside your shoe. And so one day you have to decide, well, am I going to just keep not being the full person I am and not tell the truth about myself? Or am I going to risk it all and be a truthful person? And I think that is such a tough thing to wrestle with. I think that was for me, like as far as like, you know, suicidal ideation and all that, that like more like I don't want to put my family through this, and I don't want to be this burden on people. And also it's an embarrassing thing for people who perceived you as this person that you're really not, you know, and in some eyes would be a lesser person than what people saw you to be. So yeah, it's really heavy stuff, and you can see the, you know, the mental health aspects of this that trickle mm-hmm. down. And
yeah, and you have to face that while knowing that that's a very harsh world out there.
Yeah.
Now and then, somebody who identifies as trans comes up to me and says, I think I'm transgender. I think I need to transition. Yeah. And I say, must you? And it isn't because I would not support them in their transition.
Yeah.
Far from it. It's because I know how harsh that world can be. Yeah. And I don't wish it upon my worst enemy.
Absolutely. And, you know, I do the same. I have a lot of firefighters, actually, transgender firefighters, some who are out, some aren't out, across the English-speaking world. So Canada, United States, and England primarily. I don't think I have, I think may have been one Australian. But, you know, that's always the same thing. One person in particular agonized like 3 years over this thing with me. And my attitude was like, just do what you got to do. I mean, if you can pull this off and not transition and stay closeted, well, more power to you. If that's what you need, you know, it's up to you what's most important. And I mean, there was attempted suicides with this person, and they were actually pretty high ranking, in a high ranking position in a fire department back east. And it was just like, it was agonizing watching this person agonize over it. And you just say, you know, it's whatever you choose is going to be the right thing. And now as we see, the pendulum is really going to swing really hard with Project 2025 mm-hmm. and, you know, setting the stage with these commercials and stuff during the Trump campaign of setting up hatred for trans people, that it's going to swing really hard. And so it's really, I would caution people out there that if you're thinking about coming out, I can tell you in my life, it has made it tougher in a lot of ways. I think it's been hard on my family, hard on my kids. There's an awkwardness with friends that wasn't there before. And I've never regretted it. I've never regretted coming out, transitioning, but it wasn't like, well, that solved all my problems and everything's good now. A lot of my coming out had to do with wanting to stand with people that were going to be persecuted during the first Trump administration. And I would have felt like a real coward if I didn't come out. Mm-hmm.
Everybody has their own thoughts, their own issues that they have to wrestle with. That person that agonized for all of those years, I do hope for that person's sake that they agonized with a therapist.
Yes.
And it's not that I want to be a gatekeeper on this.
Right.
That's not the point. Because of the harshness of this whole life, it's important that a person goes into this with a very clear mind.
Yeah.
With what he, she, or they're doing.
Yeah.
And that they could be as mentally sound as they possibly could, because they're going to get hit, guaranteed.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And that's the good thing about therapy. And, you know, a good therapist will tell you, you know, well, can't tell you who you are, what you are, but they will give you the tools to think about it. And then when you figure out, well, this is what I really am, they won't push you. A good therapist will not push you into any kind of decision making, because any decision you make is going to be the right decision for yourself.
In fact, the therapist that I had before I even started hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, even waited to give me the letter till she could be sure that I was not going to go back to the sex industry. And at that point, I was so done with that.
Yeah,
I had been there for a while. I saw what it was, and I saw that it wouldn't work.
Yeah. So you were doing it just to be true to yourself, not for economic gain or for to stay in that line of business.
That's right. There does come a time where one has to decide, come hell or high water, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is who I need to be. And whether it is going through the whole course with surgery, which I eventually did, mm-hmm. or simply expressing as such, that was the life I was committed to.
Yeah.
So the year that I started HRT, I was outed in my place of employment by the ER.
Wow.
And that resulted in a full-scale mutiny among the people under me.
Wow.
And so I had met my future husband, Bill, at that time. And he urged me to get a real estate license and work with him in the mortgage field. That's what I did. So eventually, I just cleared out my locker, accounted for all tools and keys, banged out a resignation letter, handed it to the director, and that night I was in real estate school.
Oh, nice, nice. That sounds good. Well, we got a break for our 20-minute after the hour stuff. But before we do, Linnea, you have kind of a handle on what's going on for this. I know there's an event actually on the day at Spokane Falls Community College, but there's an event coming up on the Saturday actually after, well, on the 23rd, right?
It is on the 23rd from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Spokane Central Library at Nequiqueco Hall,
which is up on the third floor right by the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be all sorts of events. I think there's speakers and dancing. I think there's some drag show business in there too or something. I don't know. But yeah, so that would have been good to be able to talk about that. But we know that. So we're going to do our 20-minute after the hour stuff. But then we're going to come back and we'll talk some more. And I might play, if we have time, I might play some historical stuff. But, you know, I'm having such a good time talking with Linnea. We might just keep talking the whole time. All right, let's do this thing. Where did I get you go? There we are. Okay.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for November 11th through the 15th. Monday, Windows, David Terrell, and the Strangerers at Mootsie's. Open mic with Jamerson Cheer and Ben 10 at the Red Room and Imagine Jazz at the Bad Seed. Monday and Tuesday, Open Jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, All-Star Jam with Jerry Lee Raines at Zola. Wednesday, the Rusty Jackson Band at the Valley Eagles. Live band karaoke and open mic at 9 Bar and Bistro. Open mic with Derek Hart at the Checkerboard and Open Jam at the Red Room. Thursday, Bear and Blue at Bolo's. Villa Blues and Jazz at Emmeru's. Just Plain Darren at QQ Sushi. And Trifecta at Riverside Place. Friday, Haywire at the Grain Shed. Nate Ostrander at AK Asian. Unto Others, Hoaxed, and Cruel Velvet at the Big Dipper. Dr. CeCe and the Elixir and Madrona Hollow at Jackson Street. Agents of Rock at Bolo's. Royale at Zola. And Caitlin Butts and Ken Pomeroy at the District. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Your radio station, KYRS, actively supports the diversity of the Spokane area, celebrating the many voices that make up our region. Our volunteer-run station hosts a variety of shows that feature otherwise unheard perspectives and opinions. In a sense, KYRS is working against institutional racism, sexism, homophobia, and other forms of oppression simply by existing in opposition to mainstream media. Please make a pledge today by texting Give KYRS to the number 44321. Your support keeps KYRS operating during a time when our community needs free and open media the most.
You like local music? I want you to tune in every Tuesday, 2 to 4 on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. If you haven't heard what Spokane's local music scene is all about, you're missing out. Join me on Tuesdays, 2 to 4.
I thought I had more to play, but I didn't. I better start talking. The Skate Park Project, formerly the Tony Hawk Foundation, is a skateboarding organization that helps communities build public skate parks for youth in underserved communities. To date, nearly 600 recipients of the Skate Park Project grants have opened their skate parks. These parks receive more than 6 million visits annually by youth who benefit from the active lifestyle and camaraderie the facilities promote. Information online at skatepark.org. You know, I had my grandson, been hanging out with him a little bit, and he has these little skateboards. Have you seen these that you do with your finger and you do little tricks with them? And he actually got a skateboard with these little, and he built like a miniature skateboard park in his room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. So anyway, thank you, Tony Hawk. Maybe my grandson Jack will get to use that. But so we were kind of talking about some of the ins and outs of, well, mostly the outs of transitioning. And, you know, like I think, you know, if I don't want to beat a dead horse, but things are going to get pretty rough here, I think. At least the people who are in charge told us they're going to make it rough. But, you know, every year they put out statistics on the deaths of trans people. And when you and I were talking before, that there was not, usually it's up by now. The stats for 2024 would have been up.
Yes. As far as the global statistics, usually they're up by now. I imagine they'll be up next week. That would be from TransRespect versus Transphobia. That's part of the Trans Murder Monitoring Project that's connected with Transgender Europe, or TGEU.
Yeah. Okay. So the United States, through the Human Rights Commission, they do a little bit of tracking, and they said at least 27 people in the USA, mm-hmm. according to them, were killed for being transgender. 74% were people of color. 48% were black trans women. Mm-hmm. 63% were killed with a gun. And 38% were killed by a romantic partner, family member, or friend, somebody they knew. And then 37% of those who were killed were also dead named by the press or the authorities, basically not respecting who they were as trans people.
Now, one of those people on that list of 27 that you have was not even attacked this year. This was a black trans woman, 29 years old, who is a Somali immigrant. And she was, for a time, in a refugee camp in Kenya and then came over to the United States. She was attacked and she was left paralyzed in 2022. She died in Columbus, Ohio, on September 26th from complications from that attack.
Wow. Wow.
So you can imagine that was a couple of years that she suffered all that time.
Languishing.
Yes. And probably building up humongous debt in the meantime that would probably never be answered for.
Yeah. It's, you know, I guess we'll have to kind of delve a little bit into like where we're maybe going with this, with what's been promised. What worries you the most about the upcoming political climate?
In my tradition, whether spiritual and otherwise, ethics plays a humongous role. I think it was Alexis de Tocqueville who said that America is great because America is good. When America ceases to be good, it will cease to be great.
Yeah.
And we have seen a lot of people turn their backs in the name of religion on their own religious traditions.
Yes, yeah.
The very things that we're taught.
Yeah.
They are throwing away that goodness. When people get into office that give people permission to be as hateful and violent as they could be, that makes it very dangerous for all of us, not just for trans people.
Yeah.
You could have such violence against people who are not even trans,
yeah,
but just might be holding their wife's purse while she's using the restroom.
Sure.
That's happened.
Yeah, that has happened.
People get mistaken for trans people all the time.
Yeah, there's been plenty of cisgender women who've been kicked out of restrooms because they looked masculine. And you know, not in Washington State so much, but in other parts of the country.
Yeah, and that's why the Human Rights Commission, when they originally wrote the compliance guidelines to prohibit gender identity discrimination back in 1998, they included among those feminine-appearing males, masculine-appearing males, all who are perceived, their perceived sex or gender seems to be incongruous to what is assigned to them at birth.
Yeah.
And you have to ask the question also along with that, whose perceptions are you talking about?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the perceptions of a trans person? Are you talking about the perceptions of people who look at the trans person?
Yeah.
And here's the crux of what the most successful civil rights laws have been based upon, on this issue of perception, because it doesn't matter who is doing the perceiving.
Right.
It's not right.
Yeah. And you had talked, I think it was permission structure, is that the term that people are using now? I think that was like what they talked about. Well, when all the Republican, like the 100 people or whatever that were in Trump's administration, the top level people, Republicans came out and said, don't vote for him. That they said they gave, was it permission structure or permission allowance? I can't remember the term.
I had not heard that term
yeah.
at all.
Yeah, and basically what it means is that you see people, you know, like, oh, well, he's a Republican and I'm a Republican. I'm always supposed to vote Republican, but this time I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris because this prominent Republican basically, look, if this guy's doing it, I can do it too. And I think that I don't think that panned out as much as they thought it would be, but I can tell you the permission structure of the first Trump administration was that this awful failure in a lot of ways. I mean, his, you know, the record of him failing our economy and on so many levels and people dying needlessly. But before that, all the terrible things that he did and said, and basically when he stood with white supremacists and said horrible things about people of color, that gave this permission structure for all these people that in the past felt like, you know what, this is how I feel, but if I tell people how I feel, I'm going to be seen as a real jerk. So I better just keep my mouth shut. And now they can say, well, the president of the United States feels this way. I'm not a jerk. I'm going to put leaflets. I'm going to tell people what I really think. And not only that, but I'm going to go out. The president has advocated violence, so I'm going to go out and be violent to people. So I think that's something we're going to really be up against this time. And I just don't think people, when they voted, I think there's people who are diehard folks who there was no stopping them from voting for him. But I think there was also a lot of people who didn't know what they were doing this time around are going to find out what they did really quick.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I'm reminded of something that a sheriff deputy told me, not in this state, but in another. He said that 15% of people will do what is right no matter what. 15% of people will do what is wrong. They will look for a way to do it, no matter what. They'll find a way. The rest of them will go with the flow, but here's the real kicker. The 15% who would do wrong have enormous influence upon the remaining 70%.
Wow.
And that's where it really shivers my timbers about what people could potentially do.
Yeah.
We've seen other countries where it seems like they have gone mad. It could have been China and their Cultural Revolution.
Yes.
We saw what happened in Germany.
The killing fields, you know.
Yes.
I mean, it's
yes.
just...
Yes, from the Khmer Rouge.
Yeah.
There is one thing that has really been my greatest fear, that humanity, in denying their inner divinity, also lose their humanity.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it, because I think I always think about that. You know, when you have justice, when you talk about justice, justice works on all the parties, not just the person that was perpetrated against, but also mm-hmm. the perpetrator, to live in this balance. And I always think that, you know, if you could have gone back 20 years ago and gave the laundry list of a person that just got elected and were reelected and say, this is what this person is, and this is what he's been convicted of, and here's the things that he's done. And in his first time in office, he destroyed our economy. Because of his cowardice, I forget how many hundred thousands of people died needlessly from COVID, all these things. And you go down the laundry list, which we don't have time to go down the laundry list of this person's faults and criminal activity. But if you were to go back and tell this person 20 years ago, you're going to vote for this person, I bet you there would be hardly anybody who would believe you. So we didn't get here overnight. Right. This has been a crusade. I think it started with Rush Limbaugh, kind of where he would say horrible lies about Democrats, mm-hmm. and the Democrats just said, "Oh, we're not gonna get in the mud with that," you know. And you know, people are good and they can see through this, but they'd never really addressed it. And so it has been a slide over probably 30 years. Of more than 30 years of this happening, mm-hmm. and it's not going to. I don't see it ending well for anybody.
If there's any point that I could, any time that I could point to where this slide really begins, it would be in the late 70s with the work of Dr. Francis Schaeffer.
Okay.
When he did the series, How Should We Then Live? And it was distributed to Bible colleges and seminaries all over the United States.
Yeah.
And it set the philosophical basis for people to actually rebel against their government in order to do away with abortion. That was one of his points.
Yeah, that came pretty late in the game, yeah.
Well, it came later, but
yeah.
It came right after with yeah. the moral majority, because yes. that rose up
That was their thing, yeah.
And also, one of the things that he emphasized was control of the courts.
Yeah.
Look at what has happened.
Yeah. You're going to have this, and I don't want, you know, I think it's a dark demonic force, and I think that this force controls the House, will probably more than likely control the House, control the Senate, control the presidency, and control the judicial. It'll have control of all three branches of our government. And I always think it's interesting that these groups always want to put up the Ten Commandments in schools that they call themselves Christians that do this, but nobody ever argues about putting up the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount or, you know, Matthew 25 or anything that would be, you know, that Jesus actually had to say, because they're antithetical. And I think that's the problem with a lot of kind of American-based Christianity. It's about making a buck. I mean, I always felt kind of bad for televangelists during the time of Trump, because he must have certainly cut into their market share.
Well, not really. After all, the prosperity doctrine has been really preached since the middle of the 1970s.
Yeah.
When people were facing recessions, there were certain preachers who went on the air and said, God wants you to be rich.
Yeah, and a lot of that is, send me this much money if you believe. Robert Tilton and these other guys that people thought were so funny that people were falling for these con men that they voted the biggest con man and all back in office. And it's like, so I don't, I think that people would have to look at this and say, how did we ever get here? You know, Linnea's tapping my watch because she's got an eye on the clock. And all I have is my watch because it's 4:40. And everybody knows what that means. We're breaking for more of me pushing buttons over here. And we're going to come back and talk. And then we're going to tell you some more about how to get, how to be involved in the Transgender Day of Remembrance. And maybe how to be an ally to your trans friends. And I hope, I hope one of the things this show has accomplished is that, I never knew anybody trans that was out anyways in my life. I've never met any, I had plenty of gay friends. And so when I was the only trans person I knew. So I don't blame people for not knowing a trans person. That's just the numbers game. But hopefully you know me and you know my guests that I've had on, and you'll be an ally. So let's play our stuff right now.
Howdy, folks. DJ Spokane Guy here. I host a music show called The Astral Range every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. on this here community radio station, KYRS. For each week's show, I'll take listeners on a curated journey from the homespun folk selections,
building up to a sky-minded plateau of psychedelic terrain,
then down the mountainside to base camp. Talking frontal lobe levitation, cerebellum sizzle,
medulla modulation,
and other forms of brain bubbling. Tune into The Astral Range, Fridays, 6 to 8 p.m. on KYRS 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS is grateful for the many listeners who have donated their vehicles to us. You can join them by donating your unwanted car, truck, minivan, motorcycle, and more. Vehicles are picked up free of charge, sold, and the proceeds help KYRS bring you the programs you know and love. It's easy to donate your vehicle, and it's tax deductible. Just call our toll-free line to arrange a free pickup. 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7227. Thank you.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. All right, we are back, and you are listening to Out and About. And I'm talking to my friend Linnea Kaler, who is very busy person here at KYRS and helps the trains run on time, that's for sure. And Linnea is also a trans woman like myself. And are you okay with, I always call myself a trans woman. I have no problem with that. I think some people are like, I'm a woman, but I'm like, I really, my experience as a trans person is different than a cisgender woman. And
oh, I agree. That's where I stand for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think everybody looks at that maybe a little bit differently. But so let's talk a little bit about this, how people can be allies for trans people. What do you think is the thing that folks can kind of do?
Well, the things that people can do at the very beginning is to actually talk to trans people and get to understand them. And if they're even inclined to exact judgment on cultural grounds or religious grounds, to just set that aside.
Yeah.
Just for the moment, just to understand. Because when you start to understand people, you cease to be afraid of them.
Yeah.
And if you cease to be afraid of them, you're not going to be out to harm them. There's quite a bit that trans people can offer. There are a lot of talents out there. And it's one of the things I love about KYRS is that even though I'm in a retirement situation, I can apply the talents that I have built up over the years in ways that have turned out to be effective.
Yeah, very much so.
But too often those things get overlooked.
Yeah.
Because too often people look for ways to what they think is purifying their own workspace, get rid of these strange people, if they even consider us to be people.
Well, and it makes people uncomfortable, and it's like, well, the only ways, and I tell a story, when I was at working at Gonzaga, and I have a master's degree in pastoral ministry, and I worked at Gonzaga, and I inherited the gay and lesbian support group, which was there wasn't bisexual, there wasn't transgender, it was gay and lesbian support group. Mm-hmm. And it was very much, at the time, kids were getting beat up in school and things like that. And so it was kind of like people would have to come in and talk to me, and I would talk to them, and we would figure out where, you know, they could belong to the group because of safety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was, of course, not out yet and had no plans of ever being out, although listening to these kids and their experience and their courage really certainly helped me push me towards that direction of coming out to my wife. But I remember one of the first times I knew intellectually I was okay with gay people. I was just intellectually okay with it. But I remember the first time when, you know, like during the sharing session of the support group meeting, somebody started talking about what they went and did with their boyfriend that day. A guy said that, you know, oh, my boyfriend and I, we went to the beach or whatever. And I felt myself visibly shudder. I felt myself shudder. And I was so ashamed of myself. And it was because intellectually I was there, but I didn't really know any gay people. I didn't know about their lives. I didn't. And so for me, it was strange and uncomfortable, even though intellectually I was there. And so I get it. And I get it. That's why a lot of my friends kind of weren't able to be around me anymore, because intellectually they were there, but I made them uncomfortable because they really don't want to know about my experience. And sometimes it's also like, well, I don't want people to think that I'm gay. I have a friend who's trans. You know, I don't want. So I think there's sometimes a fear of that too. So I get why people feel that way. I don't condone it, but I understand it.
And sometimes they struggle with their own sense of self and their own sense of ethics.
Yeah.
If you remember Anita Bryant,
yes,
back in the 1970s.
Orange Juice,
yes, the Orange Juice Lady had a massive campaign going on for a while against gays and lesbians.
Yeah.
She was going to roll back rights for them, and in some localized areas, she succeeded. Well, when I was at a Bible college in Joplin, Missouri, I went with a group to see Anita Bryant across the street at a tent meeting. And there were even some gays and lesbians in the back who thought the whole thing was funny, but I kept thinking, what is the point of this?
Yeah.
Fine, she's a good singer, and her husband might have some grievances of his own, but still, as far as my even being there, I thought, I'm not even fully centered on myself at this point.
Yes.
To where I could take a stand one way or another.
Right. Yeah. That must have been a very interesting experience.
That whole Bible college thing was a pretty interesting experience.
Yeah.
It was also a very toxic atmosphere that I was in.
Yeah. And one, you know, that's why you see quite a few, you know, in the news, it's always like when you see the most anti-gay pastor preaching, you just know the clock is ticking for when they get caught with the male prostitute. You know, it just seems to be sort of the how it usually goes. And I, you know, one of the things that they tried labeling LGBT folks is are groomers, you know, and for me, it's like, I don't think you understand that. Well, I did groom people in the Air Force. I helped groom younger officers into being better officers. And in my position of being a navigator and a bombardier, I groomed them into that position. I would say the same thing about being in the fire department. I did that. But as far as like who they are as people or what their orientation is, that's pretty much set in stone. And I think when people think that you're not going to persecute somebody, then you caused that thing. And so, you know, I'm grateful that at least, you know, in most of our states now, that young people and the care of young people who I wish I would have had that kind of ability as a kid and had lived in a society where people knew that being transgender was a thing. I think that in a society where doctors and parents who want the best for their kid and wrestle, and these kids are all three, the doctors, the parents, the kids are wrestling with this, but now you want to assert your basically just being awful people into that equation. You think that that's the people who are doing the good thing for the children are the groomers, when actually you're the groomer of grooming hate and really showing that what government, how intrusive government can be.
And you know what I found that was so sad about this was that I was in line to be a youth mentor.
Oh, man.
And then the whole groomer gossip manifest throughout the news media and social media. And I told the organization that was going to hire me on to do that if I do this, you know that I'm transgender. I don't want to drag you into controversy. And I just had to pull out.
I think that's a lot of things people don't think about, too, is that we, and maybe it's our generation more so, but we do self-edit quite a bit. There are like parties I don't go to because I don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. And, or I don't, you know, like, same thing with kids. I mean, I don't want anybody, can you imagine what would happen if you were like a Boy Scout leader leading this thing and then little Billy goes home and tells his mom, I think I'm transgender too. They're going to hold you accountable. They're going to say that it's your fault, even though this child now is just saying this because they feel safe. They're in a safe place, you know, that somebody would be kind to them. But that's not how it might not look. And I don't want to have to deal with any of that.
Yeah, those red herrings reach into many places, even into such things as healthcare.
Yes, yeah.
Right now, I'm to be real quick, I'm holding on my hands a letter that was written by the Human Rights Commission to then Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, talking about the transgender health benefit. Now, in 2001, the Board of Supervisors approved this benefit despite national ridicule. They were the first city in the country to do that.
Wow.
And people said, oh, that's going to bankrupt the system. Well, what really happened was this. The premium amounted to $1.70 per month. That was the difference.
Yeah.
And they anticipated that 35 people would be using the benefit. Well, as it turned out, 7 people used the benefit.
Yeah.
And they collected $4.3 million for over 3 years and only paid out $156,000. So they reduced the benefit, they reduced the premium to $1.16. Well, they ended up making even more money. And only 11 people took the benefit. Well, eventually they got rid of the premium altogether. Now they treat it just like they would call bladder surgery. So anybody who tells you that transgender health is going to bankrupt the whole system
right.
of insurance, that is utter nonsense.
It is. And that's like when they kicked out the transgender people serving in the military, which I'm sure they'll do again this time, is that that wasn't, they said it was a cost thing, but you actually people pay a lot more for people who are diabetic and all. It's mm-hmm. it's really not much at all. And then the commercials where Trump was talking, or, you know, Kamala Harris is going to pay for gender-affirming care in prisons. Well, guess what? Guess that's by the law. And guess who else did it? Donald J. Trump paid the same thing.
Yes, and they spent $215 million on those ads, according to two sources. So that's verified information.
All right, we got to go. Thanks, Linnea. Thanks for everybody for listening to Out and About. We'll see you next week. Please observe Transgender Day of Remembrance however you want to. And, well, hopefully in a good fashion. And you are listening to KYRS Medical Lake, Spokane.
Election, a social media pundit expressed amazement that Democrat Kamala Harris had lost, noting that America is enjoying an objectively strong economy. Indeed, the data show impressive job growth, rising wages, slowing inflation, etc., all indicators of a solid economy. Nearly every pundit hailed this as meaning Harris's campaign could glide on rising prosperity, while focusing her main message on what a dangerous, bumbling buffoon Trump is. The problem is that objective economic data often deceives. For example, consider economist John Kenneth Galbraith's sad tale of the 6-foot-tall statistician who drowned crossing a stream with an average depth of 2 feet. Millions of Americans are drowning in today's economy. Even workaday people with college degrees are struggling to make ends meet and feeling pessimistic about their future. Happy talk by economists, pundits, and politicians doesn't pay the rising bills for rent, childcare, groceries, insurance, medicines, etc. Everything is moving out of reach, except a protest vote. About half of Trump voters say high prices were, quote, the largest factor in their vote. Democratic Party officials were dazzled by the soaring Dow Jones average, ignoring the Doug Jones average, which showed that Doug and Donna are struggling, anxious, angry, and even open to a bull goose demagogue blustering that he'll fix the rigged system on day one. This is Jim Hightower saying, few of these hard-hit men and women actually believe in, agree with, trust, or even like Trump, nor are they stuck on supporting him. But they will be unless and until some progressive party decides to side with grassroots people in an unabashed fight for economic fairness and social justice. To help push in that direction, go to workingfamilies.org. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
Thin Air Community Radio, KORS, Medical Lake, Spokane.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Who's going to stand up and say, the cartels are gone, the criminal migrants are gone, the gangs are gone, America is for Americans and Americans only?
President-elect Donald Donald Trump has tapped immigration hardliner Stephen Miller to a top White House post as the incoming administration prepares to carry out what it calls the largest deportation campaign in U.S. history. Miller will play a key role along with Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, and South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who will reportedly be the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. We'll speak to Jean Guerrero, author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. Then, as stock prices soar for the GEO Group and other private prison companies, we'll speak to Silky Shah of the Detention Watch Network. And finally, American Coup, Wilmington, 1898.
It was a different vision of what American democracy could be, that it could actually be multiracial.